Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Hello, welcome to the first Terrace Talk of 2020. The first time in the new year that we've come to you. It's been a bit busy over the festive period with the sheer amount of games, and we've not quite found the period to sit down with a couple of Norwich City fans and discuss the goings on. So that is what we are doing today. My name is Connor Southall, joined by two Norwich City fans, although one is wearing another team's tracksuit top, so I'm not quite sure how I feel about that. But there we go. At least you've come prepared. To my right, Anna Say. Anna, thank you very much for joining us. And to my left, Ben Ambrose, who has stepped in as an emergency loan replacement, given it's a January window. He's, as you can see, come prepared, and he's made it into the starting 11 after training well this week. So
that was class from you.
Thank
that
you.
Was really
thank
good,
you. I rehearsed that in the mirror, so that's good. Right, guys, let's start then, as we always do, with some quick fire questions. I've had to prepare a completely different set for Ben, given this is his second appearance. It's greedy. Let's start with Anna then. Anna, welcome to the show, first and foremost. We'll put you through the familiar set of questions just to ease you in, given Ben's a second time. I've given him a considerably tougher set of questions. So let's start with the nice and easy opening question of where do you sit in the ground?
Well, that's actually probably a little bit more complicated than most people, because I'm a programme seller, and once I've done doing that, I get a free ticket, and it just tends to be wherever they put me. It varies normally between the community stand and the south stand.
Where's your favourite place to sit then? If you had to choose a place to sit in the ground, where would you go for?
I do like the south stand, because I feel like you've got a pretty good view of everything there. You've got, especially if you like in the middle of the south stand. It's nice, just a nice view.
Cool, perfect. Do you go to football with anyone?
No, because like I said, I'm a programme seller, so I'm just cash up straight in afterwards.
Perfect. You can't complain about that. That certainly sounds good. Do you remember your first game watching Norwich City?
I don't remember my first game, because I was very young when I started to go, but the first game
you can remember
that, yeah. I can remember would probably be Wolves away in the playoff semi-final.
Perfect. And what has been your favourite game as a Norwich City supporter to watch?
Oh, that is a tough question.
There's plenty to choose from.
I thought you gave him all the tough questions.
I thought I did.
I don't know, there's so many. I mean, like, I remember from the very classic one from when I was very young, under Nigel Worthington, when we beat Man United 2-0. Or you've got pretty much any game from last season. I mean, I did really like the, I know it's a bit obscure, but it's the Ipswich one where we scored in the very last second, just because of how kind of low I was to then kind of how high I was within a few seconds. I don't know. Can't I just choose every game? Every game that I go to is my favourite.
There we go. That's a good enough answer for us. What about your favourite niche player? So this is a player that we might not consider to be a Norwich City legend, but they have a special place in your heart.
So yeah, once again, that's a tough question. Every player I can think of, I think, would be the Norwich City legends. I mean, Can I pick someone who's a current player?
Pick a current player, go for it.
Tim Closer has always been my favourite. He's been my favourite since he came to Norwich. I mean, he might not be legend status at the moment, but I think he'll get there eventually. I think he's great. He's my favourite.
And we know you sell programmes, but are there any pre-match rituals that you have? Do you set yourself perhaps a certain target of programmes you have to sell for it to be a good day?
I just think, like, the whole process of selling programmes and everything that I do, that kind of feels like a bit of a pre-match ritual now. You go through exactly the same things. Mm-hmm. You go in, you cash up, then you get your ticket, you go in. The whole thing now, for me, would feel odd if I didn't do that on the match day. So it feels a bit like a ritual for me now.
Interesting. Right, there you go. That's your... We'll describe it as a grilling, but I think I was quite kind. They're your questions for today. Ben, you've got a considerably tougher set, given this is your second appearance.
I'm sweating.
Good. I'm glad. That's probably the tracksuit top, in fairness. It is quite warm in here. The first one, I think, is the toughest. I think what we'll do is, when people come back on for the second and third appearances, we'll make the questions considerably tougher, make them a bit more challenging. Make sure you don't get too comfortable in your seat. So let's start first and foremost, then. Your favourite loan signing? Which you've got a lot of loan signings to choose from, although given that you were drafted in the emergency loan, we're hoping you're more Darren Huckabee or Jordan Rose than Patrick Roberts or Marcus Edwards. So what's your favourite Norwich City loan signing?
Is that of the decade or is that ever?
All time.
Fraser Forster.
Why?
He was class, wasn't he? He was so, so good. And when he went, I was absolutely livid. I can't actually remember who was in goal. It was John Ruddy the season after, wasn't it? So we replaced him well, but Fraser Forster for me.
Most underrated signing?
I saw that question, I started quivering. I was terrified. I'd probably have to say David Fox. If this is of all time,
because I'm with you.
He was so, so good. And I know he gets a lot of praise and stuff, but not enough, if you know what I mean. But David Fox, yeah.
75 glorious appearances. And when you consider some of the players he was alongside in midfield, Andrew Sermon, Wes Houlihan as well, who perhaps took the plaudits a bit more for him, but we all remember that cross, don't we, for Simeon Jackson, where Norwich clinched promotion. Nice, easy one. Favourite current player?
Tim Krul. Easy.
Nice goalkeeping theme going in your answers. I'm enjoying this. Moment of the decade. Given that we have entered a new decade, we better... it depends who you ask if we've entered a new decade, but we're in 2020, so I think we can class it as a new decade. What was your moment of the last decade? And because there were a few to choose from. It was quite a good decade. There were plenty of football clubs who probably don't go through what Norwich City went through in the last decade in their entire history. So there we go. But what's your moment?
It's a tough choice between Wembley and the semi-final at Carrow Road, but I think I have to go for the semi-final because it was so sweet, wasn't it? Just beating Ipswich, given the context of the season, that I think Ipswich fans were giving it large because I think it was 1-1 on aggregate, wasn't it? And they were thinking, oh, here we go. But then Wesley Houlihan sat the keeper down. I think, who scored the second? Was it Redmond? I think it was Redmond with one of the most underrated finishes I've seen for a long time because he's squeezed it through so many bodies. But it's definitely Ipswich at home in the semi-final for me.
What about your unsung hero of the decade? I must credit Chris Gorham, who asked me this question yesterday, and it got me thinking. My answer was actually David Fox.
I'll
see what you can mix up a bit then. You're not allowed to go for David Fox. But who is your unsung hero of the decade?
That's a really tough one, that is. That's a really tough one. I can't think of anyone other than David Fox. Probably someone, maybe Martin Olsen. I feel it's a brave call, I think, because I've given him a bit of stick on social media compared to Lewis, but I think I have to go for Martin Olsen because I did enjoy watching him play. He crossed the ball and left back and right back as well, such an important position. So I think I have to go for Martin Olsen.
Lovely. And finally, I'm going to put you... No, I think Martin Olsen is an interesting answer. I was surprised more people didn't put him in their team of the decade, to be honest, when that was all floating around on social media. Finally, I know you've got a few of these. Let's have one of your unpopular Norwich City opinions, because we like to have a bit of a debate on this show. And then I'll ask Anna what she thinks of your opinion as well.
I don't know how unpopular this is, but it's quite a brave one, which is Todd Cantwell is not ready to leave Norwich City. Absolutely no way near ready. Because I've seen his name linked in various papers, the credibility of them papers, you know, you have to question sometimes.
Our paper is very credible.
The Sun, we're talking about. You've got to put a little asterisk in between the S and the N. But yeah, he's not ready for a move away because he's not good enough, essentially, for a big team. I've seen £20 million linked with his name. I think, no, not a chance.
Hey, Anna, do you agree with that? Is Todd Cantwell ready to step up? He's been linked with pretty much every big club in England. Manchester City, I think Liverpool is the link today. Tottenham as well. Manchester United, you could put in that category as well. Is he quite ready to step up to that level, do you think?
I don't think so either. I mean, I love the guy. I think he's great. But he's still at that point where, yes, he's doing well, but he's not consistent enough. You look at somebody like Maddison, who kind of flew with us, and he was consistently at a really high level every single time. It actually got to the point where it was like, Maddison scores or nobody scores. Yeah. And with Cantwell, I just think that, yes, he's doing well, but he's still got a long way to go.
I think I agree. Right, let's talk about the football then. It was a hectic festive period. Started off with a 2-1 defeat to Wolves that Norwich City, certainly in the first half at least, probably edged, which will become a regular theme as I read through these fixtures. A 1-0 defeat at Villa, again, another missed opportunity. Then we had that 2-2 draw with Spurs, where VAR played a significant role, which I'm sure we'll come on to at some point. And then, of course, we had the 1-1 draw with Crystal Palace on New Year's Day before the FA Cup tie with Preston. Is it fair to say an overarching theme of those festive period was plenty of good performances for Norwich, but perhaps not enough points on the board?
Yeah, it's frustrating because it's almost easier to deal with if Norwich aren't playing well, but they're just so close to it. And there's been like little moments which are the deciding factors. Like what we can say in the Spurs match, it was VAR that was the deciding factor. And but you look at the Wolves match, and we weren't good enough in the second half, and that was the deciding factor. But it's not like we've been playing bad, and that's what's so frustrating about it. We're so close.
Yeah, Ben, I think Anna's right. I think there have been times with Norwich City sides in the Premier League, certainly, where you could perhaps question the application or the work rate. That certainly can't be questioned with this team. Is it just a lack of quality in the decisive periods within games? And we've referenced the games there, but certainly in that Palace game, I think Kenny McLean hit the bar, didn't he, at 1-0. If that goes in, it's small margins, isn't it? I suppose basically is what I'm alluding to, is those small margins in games that Norwich City haven't quite grasped.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's sort of a combination between, I think to say a lack of quality is a bit harsh, because, you know, there's a reason we've played so well for the first 45, which is that we've got the quality. But I think at the moment, like specifically, it's sort of a mentality thing, because, you know, the Norwich players have got it. We've seen it time and time again. You look at the first half against Wolves, first half against Sheffield United, first half against Spurs, definitely, and, you know, all the other games, Villa as well. But I think it's just a mentality thing, to be honest with you, because it's very much, you know, they're young players, inexperienced players, which is worth noting, very, very inexperienced when it comes to the Premier League. I think it's Krul and Hanley are the most experienced out of a lot of them. But it's just very much a mentality thing for me at the moment. We know Norwich can turn it around, because realistically we've seen Norwich City side turn, you know, the tide many times. But it's a mentality thing for me, not really quality.
I think it's 7 times in the last 9 games they've taken the lead and failed to convert them. And that says all about this Norwich City side at the moment, doesn't it? We've seen enough, and I've said this numerous times in certainly my matchday vlogs in the review at the end, where we've seen enough from this Norwich side that suggests they do have the quality. It's just those moments in games that they just can't quite get to go in their favour.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, the kind of what I've been thinking about is that I don't think that they were prepared for the intensity of the Premier League. I think they initially they thought, okay, the Championship, it was all kind of, you know, rough and tumble, all the physicality was down in the Championship. I think they were unprepared for the different intensity that the Premier League holds. I mean, you look at the Wolves match and they gave it all in that first half, so much so that they came in, out in the second half looking really tired. And I think even Hanley admitted that in his post-match interview. And I think to compete in this league, you have to be able to maintain that kind of intensity the whole match. And I think that's one thing that they were probably unprepared for. And you can, I'd say, put that down to a lack of experience in the Premier League, especially from maybe Farker himself.
Interesting. Yeah, out of those 4 games, I mean, if we look at it now, Wolves, they were 1-0 up at half time. Villa was a different case, but certainly Spurs and Palace, they're also leading at half time. What can they do in this second half of the season to make sure that they're turning those leads into wins? Because at the moment, the situation for them is precarious. They're sat bottom of the league. They're, what, 7 points adrift. They're in real danger of being cut away from the pack, aren't they?
I think there's two things. One is take your chances in the first half, which, you know, is such an easy thing to say. You know, there is a sort of an aura of being unlucky, because realistically you look at McLean hitting the crossbar, I think it's in the second half, yeah. But you know, we have been unlucky, but you have got to take them chances. You look at Wolves, Pookie should have had a hat-trick. You give the ball to Pookie in that position, you expect him to score. Perhaps a lack of confidence for him, I'm not sure, but the second thing is to play more like we did against Palace, because watching that Palace game I was impressed, but for different reasons, which is it was probably Norwich's most impressive display for me, because we looked really comfortable off the ball, and you can sort of see that in the fact that I think Palace scored in the 88th minute or something, which was Max Aaron switched off for a split second and Zaha crept out of his pocket, squared the ball for Wickham, for which VAR was actually used right for once, which yeah. is nice to see. But it's just very much a case of play more like we did against Palace, because for me that's adapting to the Premier League. One of the big questions was to adapt to the Premier League. How do you do that? And Norwich did that against Palace, but take a few more of your chances. You look at the Palace game, you've got Vrančić at the back post, McLean, Buendia's free kick. 9 times out of 10 that free kick goes in, 9 times out of 10 McLean hits the ball an inch lower, and so on. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think it's been interesting, because when they have taken the lead in games, I think what they've been punished for is not getting that second goal, or getting that goal that is capable of basically putting them in the driving seat, or enough to certainly stay out the game. In the Spurs game is a different example, because they did score that second goal. They did. And it would have been fascinating had the lines not have been drawn and the rulers not have dictated that Timu Pukki was offside by a matter of millimetres, whether that would have been a game that they would have gone on to win. But I suppose we will never know. That festive period then ended on Saturday. I suppose we can say that. The Christmas trees have gone down. We all travelled up to Preston for the FA Cup third round, which we were all delighted about. But in the end, it was quite a good game, wasn't it? And a game where we saw a Norwich City striker, 18-year-old Adam Eder, take his opportunity and score a hat-trick. I mean, as a supporter, how good is it to see a young player like that take his opportunity?
I was so happy about that, because I love kind of having a look at the academy, you know, seeing who might be the next big prospect, seeing kind of who's been doing what in the matches. And for the last two seasons, I've constantly been looking at him going, he's the next best thing, he's going to be great. And last season, when we saw the academy prospects come through and the graduates, I was like, I'm telling you now, he's going to be the next big graduate, he's going to be the next big thing. And it was frustrating kind of towards the beginning of the season when we're seeing him like fade away a little bit. You thought, oh, is he going to do it? And I was worried that he might not come through, but he had to wait for his moment, and he took his moment against Preston, and it was so good, and I was so pleased for him, and I really think this could be the start of a good future for him.
I think what was key about his performance is unlike when he played against Crawley, he got a big chance early on, didn't he? And he took that chance, and that seemed to give him the confidence to actually go on and impose himself in the game a bit more.
Absolutely, and it's obviously down to the other players who gave him a chance. It was Steepman who put the great ball through for him, and that's the way it's got to be as a team. You look at Pookie, and most of the time he's not getting those goals unless people are putting that ball at his feet, and I think it really did help him. And one thing I was blown away by with that goal was how fast he was, because all of a sudden you just see him break through the two defenders. I was like, he just broke away from them. I was like, for a guy to be as tall as he is, I think he's like 6'3", and like as bulky as he is, and still have that kind of pace, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do.
He certainly has the pace I wished I had when I was a footballer, distinctly lacking that. Ben, I think everyone knows now, common knowledge, that the club were looking to loan Adam Eder out. They were looking to get him out on loan to an EFL club, probably League One level. There probably would have been a lot of clubs that fancied him, perhaps even more so after this weekend. Has he made it impossible for Norwich City, and we'll come on to the transfer window in more depth, but just on Eder quickly, has he made it impossible for Norwich City to let him go out on loan this window?
I don't think he's made it impossible, but it was an interesting one to see Eder involved. Not that's what I say Eder then. But I sort of looked at that game as him putting himself on the shop window a bit, to go on loan, obviously. And I think it's just gone really well for him, which is fortunate for him and fortunate for Norwich City, because now he's an option, realistically. Whether he'll start against Manchester United, I'm not too sure, because I don't really know the situation on Pukki.
Well, we're still, I think, classing Pukki as a bit of a doubt. Still struggling with his hamstring and of course, that toe injury that he suffered as well. So, will be, and I suppose that would have been my next question. Again, we'll preview Manchester United in more depth in a little bit. But if the situation is playing a half-fit Timo Pukki or a fully fit Adam Eder at Old Trafford, especially what we saw, and we're filming this on what, Wednesday lunchtime, the afternoon after Manchester United got beat 3-1 by Manchester United, looking at their back line, what they struggled with was pace. And I think if you let Adam Eder at them, then there's an opportunity that he would get the space in behind to run onto.
I think a good thing about starting Eder as well would be the fact that he's sort of an unknown. He's an unknown element to the Premier League, to sort of senior football, really. So it would be nice to see him sort of go and have fun, because realistically, you come to sort of expect this from Norwich now. It's very much a sort of, why not, just give the youth a chance, and realistically, it's paid off brilliantly for Norwich. So for me personally, I'd chuck him in there, and I'd have full faith that he'd do all right for himself, because as you alluded to earlier, he's a finisher and he's quick as well. So, you know, that seems to be the perfect sort of combination for a striker, doesn't it?
Certainly has the raw materials. Whether he can convert that into consistency in the Premier League is going to be the next task. And of course, if he can't, then who knows? Maybe he will move out on loan this window, of course, depending on what Norwich City do in terms of their striking options at the club. Reports that Denis Shrabeni might be leaving to Germany as well.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst, so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. initial quality study award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
Which again, we'll come on to later. Anna, let's talk about the FA Cup then in a bit more depth. Obviously, Norwich will travel again to the northwest, another really long trip sandwiched in between Spurs and Newcastle to face Burnley at Turf Moor. Quite a difficult task, but as Daniel Farke said in his pre-match press conference on Friday, the cup competitions offer them a chance to build some momentum, don't they?
Absolutely, and I think you look at the Preston match and we will have taken a lot of confidence from that, because the amount of people who, when we got drawn against Preston, were like, oh, great, Preston will probably lose that one. Alex Neil will want to get one over on us, and we actually looked really comfortable. And I mean, you look at Steveman, who's not had the best season. Hernandez, who got his goal, will be really happy from that. And I think they can only take confidence from that. You look at Eder, if he'd had another bad game, who knows what might have happened, but he's taken so much confidence from that. And I think, yeah, Burnley, it's not the best draw in the world. He might have wanted something better, but it's a chance for these players to get game time, to impress, to possibly stake their claim for a start. And so, of course, it'll get us momentum and it'll give those players a chance to impress.
I'm being a bit pessimistic here, so you have to forgive me. But let's say in a hypothetical world, Norwich City get relegated this season, which is a possibility given their situation at the moment. What we saw at Deepdale on Saturday was a side stripped of perhaps the players that many would, or perhaps the favourites to leave, I suppose, in terms of their young talent. What we saw was a Norwich City side who could function efficiently against a Championship side, which, if Norwich City do find themselves in that situation, let's hope that they don't, that will give some people at the club and also supporters as well some confidence that should that happen, that they can compete at that level with the elements that they've got.
Yeah, if you want to take confidence from it like that, then sure. Be my guess.
Maybe that's me looking at it with half empty.
I definitely see what you're saying. An interesting point for me is how comfortable Steepman looked, because coming up to the Premier League, he was my favourite player of last season. I mean, obviously, you've got your Pukkis and stuff and your Buendias, but it was Steepman for me. And this season, he's just not settled in the Premier League. You know, I think it'd be fair to say that, wouldn't it? And to see him play so well and so comfortably against Preston is sort of an indicator for me that perhaps he is of Championship quality. Onel Hernandez as well, being a bit more comfortable on the ball, looking a bit better. Maybe he suits the Championship as well. But I definitely see where you're coming from. But at the same time, I don't really want to look that way, because my heart still says that we can stay up.
Yeah, let's not get drawn into that situation. Like I said, it was me being a bit negative, a bit tongue-in-cheek. But given the situation they find themselves in, no doubt the people at the club will have to plan for that outcome. I'm going to ask you both a question now, the same question, in terms of how important could a cup run to Norwich City season be? Because many people, there will be some who see it as a hindrance and see it as secondary to their Premier League competition, I suppose, and how they their league form, and their league form is the priority. But if they can have a good run in the FA Cup, which we don't really associate with the Norwich City side, then as I said to Anna, that could build some momentum for the Premier League that they can take through.
For me, if you're going to be miserable about the FA Cup, then you don't love football properly, because the FA Cup is such a beautiful thing that has been sort of put down the pecking order, in terms of its importance. And within England, it's a massive cup, it's a massive trophy. By no means necessary do I think Norwich City are going to go and win it now, because I think that would be a bit extreme. But at the same time, one, it's good for the players because, you know, it's winning football games, isn't it? Two, they're enjoying themselves, so the confidence and the morale at the club will go up. And three, it's just good for us fans, isn't it? Because you want to see your football club win games. And if you're doing that in the league, in the cup, it doesn't really matter to me because you're sort of there, you're enjoying it. But yeah, it would be nice to see because, you know, the FA Cup, as you said, is not a competition we associate with success within the Norwich City sphere. But I'd love to see a cup run. And you've got the argument about, do you sort of place it above the league? I don't think you do, but at the same time, treat it with the respect it deserves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that. Of course, Norwich progressed to the fourth round for the first time in 7 years. Where does the FA Cup rank in terms of your priorities?
Well, I think for me, all cups are important because you get so many players who probably are frustrated with the amount of game time that they get, and they can get a chance in the cup. I mean, you look at the one against Preston, we made 8 changes, and that means that that's 8 players who probably wouldn't have got a start in a league match, and they went out there and they proved that they were good enough. You look at somebody like, once again, like Ida, who's got himself all the headlines. How long would it have taken him to do that if they didn't have the cup? I think that as much as it's important for fans, it's important for those players who aren't getting the game time as well. And I think that it's good for everyone. It's good for morale if you get a couple of good cup games under your belt as well. It's good for confidence, and it just makes everything feel a bit better as well.
Yeah, I think I agree, particularly in the situation where Norwich are. They certainly can't complain about winning matches at the moment, in however that arrives. Right then, let's look ahead to the trip to Old Trafford on Saturday, which I think usually we'd associate with quite a daunting fixture, but given the situation Manchester United find themselves in, perhaps there will be a few supporters who will go to Old Trafford with a bit of confidence. Is that fair to say, Anna?
I think it's one of those matches where you just got to go, and you've just got to go for it. I mean, you've got to go there and be fearless, because I think I remember last time when we played Manchester United, we were in a similar situation going, oh, they're not doing too well at the moment, and we all saw what happened there. But yeah, it's Old Trafford. Yeah, it's an intimidating ground, but you've got to go for it because you never know what might happen. You've seen games this season, like against Man City, against Leicester, against those teams where we didn't look like we'd come out with anything, but we did come out with a result. So we've got to go there, see what happens, and just leave it all on the pitch.
Yeah, so Manchester United on Saturday, Ben, obviously not what they once were in terms of that formidable force under Sir Alex Ferguson. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the helm at the moment, perhaps under a little bit of pressure given not just the performances, but I think for me it shows just how well you can do as a manager by going in a club and talking about the importance of young players, perhaps buying yourself a bit of time. They're a team who predominantly enjoy counter-attacking. Norwich City are a team who like to keep possession. It does feel like Norwich's style of play does lend itself to the way Manchester United want to play. Can you see Daniel Farke perhaps being a bit more pragmatic with the way he sets up his Norwich City side in Manchester on Saturday?
I don't think too much will change, to be honest with you. I think, if, as I said earlier, you can sort of copy and paste that Palace performance, but you take your chances, which, as I said earlier, is so easy to say. But I think if you sort of copy and paste that performance, we can easily beat Man United. You know, famous last words, but they're a team to be beaten, definitely. And I think last time we were there, we won 2-0 in very similar circumstances.
2-1.
2-1, sorry. Was it 2-1? Who scored for Man United?
Martial.
That is... All right, fair enough then. 2-1. But yeah, Man United, they're definitely there to be beaten. And to be honest with you, 3 points isn't that important to me because it's Man United. They're still fifth, you know. It's not the end of the world for them, is it? They're still... they're not Arsenal in 10th. But, you know, for me, for the players, it's just about go out there and enjoy yourself, because why do you play football? To enjoy yourself. And if you can start enjoying yourself again, the confidence comes back, to which, as we've seen, is so, so important for Norwich. So hopefully they enjoy themselves, the confidence comes back, and you look at, I think, who have we got after Man United?
Bournemouth at home.
Bournemouth at home, so that's a very winnable fixture. So if you can take some confidence from Man United onto Bournemouth, could work out for Norwich.
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier on, and you said that performances had improved, and perhaps over the December as a month, we saw a very consistent block of Norwich City performances and fairly good performances as well, certainly within periods of games. Perhaps there was a 45 minutes or a 20 minutes here and there that they didn't quite reach the standards. But how important is performance over result this weekend? Because it is not a game that Norwich City will be expected to win, but if they can, as you say, draw some confidence for them or from it, it can ultimately help them in that game against Bournemouth. But on the flip side, there'll be some people who say, we've seen enough good performances, now it's time to see some points.
For me personally, it's always been about performance, because I listened to Stuart Webber at the beginning of the season and he was very much like, it's 38 free hits, to which I've sort of maintained that mentality across the season. So when you look at this sort of game specifically, Old Trafford, you know, fairly daunting fixture for such inexperienced players, I think it's about performance, because, you know, right now I'd bite your hand off for a point. You know, in context, it might not be that important of a point, but, you know, it's about the performance and getting the confidence back. I can't bang the confidence drum hard enough or loud enough, because, you know, it's such an important factor to this Norwich City team. But yeah, for performance, for me, definitely have a result.
Anna, Manchester United, daunting, I think that's fair to say. But if Norwich City perform to the way they have, and you referenced it earlier on about how they went to Leicester and got a very good point there, obviously beat Manchester City earlier on in the season, they've tended to do well against what we've classed as the better sides.
Absolutely. And I will say, unfortunately, I do disagree with the performance being the most important thing at the moment, because, unfortunately, as much as I love this team, we're at the point where we need points. Because if we, say, lose and everybody else wins, then you're almost kind of looking like it's going to be really hard to come back from. But if we go there and we get a point or we get a win, suddenly we're like, OK, maybe we can do this, which I do still believe we can. I just think it's daunting, but I, hand on heart, truly believe that those players are good enough to go there and get a result, especially with how Man United have been at the moment.
It's interesting, you've both said, and again, this is another question for both of you, that you both believe Norwich City can stay up. Is that the fan inside of you, or is there evidence that you've seen this season to suggest that they are good enough and they are capable of surviving?
Well, it's frustrating because, like I said, I truly do believe that these players, and as a team, they are good enough to stay up. I just think that, unfortunately, they came into this season a little bit unprepared, and that's not just the team, that's Farker as well. And so many of them are so inexperienced. And I mean, they are good enough. We've seen them get results, and it's just, like everybody has said, those fine margins. But I think get a couple of results, get a couple of important points, and anything can happen. We saw that Watford looked dead and gone, and look where they are now. So if they can do it, there's no reason to say we can't.
What are you basing your optimism on, Ben?
Well, you know,
you are forever the optimist.
No, I was going to say, you know me, but the fan inside of me says we can stay up, but my head also says if we go down, it's not the end of the world, because so many fans, including myself, you know, express such frustration at this, you know, potential that Norwich City sit on. But at the same time, if we suddenly go down, it's not the end, you know, the potential's not gone. Yeah, you might lose a Pookie, you might lose a Buendia, you might lose a Max Aarons,
Ben
Godfrey as well. But
Todd Cantwell.
I don't think Jamal Lewis would leave, but that's a whole different point. But at the same time, the people who brought these players in are still here. Stuart Webber, Kieran Scott, all the other guys behind the scenes, they're the only two names I know. But it's not the end of the world. So if we go down, you should have full faith that we can bring these players in again, because it wasn't a fluke. These are smart people. They know what they're doing. They've been doing it for, what, the last 3 years here at Norwich City. Obviously, you've got the bad eggs that have come in, but, you know, nothing's perfect. And given the context of Norwich City as a club, the history we've had with transfers, you look at Stephen Naismith, Norwich are doing such a good job at the moment. But, yeah, for me, we can stay up because, you know, we've seen Norwich can play really, really good stuff. And what you said earlier, we don't get brushed aside by the big teams. But at the same time, 7 points adrift, it's looking a bit bleak at the moment. But just go for it. Enjoy your football.
I think we'll describe those as two rallying cries. I'll provide a bit of balance, and these two won't like me for saying it, but no side with 14 points on the board at this stage in the Premier League has ever survived. So it would take Norwich to break some records, but it can be done, and we have seen it in the Premier League before. I'm sorry for chucking that in. Right, let's move on to the transfer window then. It's the reason we're in this building and not gone out today, in case there's anything breaks that I need to go and immediately run off to report on, but hopefully that's not the case. What do both of you guys want from Norwich City in the transfer window? We've seen a lot more action in terms of outgoing so far, players being recalled on from loan. Patrick Roberts, I suppose, is probably the most noticeable, who of course got his loan cut short and then joined Middlesbrough. What are you perhaps expecting and hoping from Norwich City in this transfer window?
Well, I'm hoping that because they have got a few people out, they've like cut a couple of loans short, like Patrick Roberts, that does leave room to bring a couple of people in. I'm not saying like go out and spend all the money in the world. I do think there are a couple of places in the team that do need a bit of strengthening. I mean, we don't want to go through that whole centre-back issue again, because that was awful. And I mean, if Hanley or Zimmerman get injured, you're looking at probably going through that again, and obviously we're at a point where I didn't think we'd get to it, where we're looking a little thin on strikers. So if they're going to get anybody in, I think a centre-back and a striker would be the best options, and I don't mind whether that's loan or buying somebody on the cheap, but I just think they've got to get somebody in.
What are your hopes, Ben, for the transfer window? Where do you hope Norwich City are in terms of their squad come February the 1st?
I don't expect many changes, because we were speaking about this the other day, weren't we? And we sit rock bottom of the Premier League, 7 points adrift. So attracting players that are going to keep you up is going to be almost an impossible task. Given the resources of Norwich City as well, we know that Norwich aren't the richest club in England. But I'm not really expecting too much. But I want to make a bit of a wider point, which is I'm filled with such pride to support Norwich at the moment, because you look at Stuart Webber and his recruitment team, you look at players coming back from loans who've been sent out, and examples,
Lou Thompson, Rocky Bashiri.
There you go, players like that who aren't getting the game time away from Norwich City, but the attention is being paid to them to call them back. So for me, I look at that and I think I'm more interested in that than who Norwich are going to sign, because it's sort of a sign of so much attention to detail is being paid, which is so important, because, you know, we're in the Premier League, yeah, but we're still building as a club. I'm pretty sure it'd be fair to say that we're well ahead of the curve in our plan. But, yeah, for me, I focus more on that rather than the actual starting 11, the first team, because I don't think Norwich are going to really bring anyone in. I don't think it will go down too well. But at the same time, what can you expect for a team that's resources are very restricted, a team that sits 7 points adrift? But, yeah, I don't expect too much. And I'm not too fussed either.
Yeah, I think we've heard Stuart Webber say before that this is notoriously a more difficult window to navigate in because of the prices. And obviously, there'll be Premier League teams who won't want Norwich City to be strengthened and strengthen a direct rival because of that. So I do wonder whether the loan market for Norwich City will be the market that perhaps they get most joy out of, given, as you said, their predicament in the league and perhaps how attractive an entity they are at the moment for a prospective signing. Because if you're going to find yourself back in the Championship in 6 months, which is a very real possibility, then who knows? For some players, that perhaps wouldn't be as attractive as perhaps getting a Premier League move. Let's move on there. You mentioned it in terms of Norwich being perhaps a little bit thin on the ground on strikers. The latest report is that as we sit here now, of course, things develop so quickly. So by the time this is out and released, the situation may have changed. But if reports are to be believed that Denis Chrabenny is on his way to Germany, as you said, that does leave Norwich a bit thin on the ground in terms of strikers. Does that, for you, mean keeping Adam Eder around and keeping him in the building? Or does it actually mean Norwich dipping their toe in the water and perhaps bringing in another option in that area of the pitch?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I think you've got to keep Eder around because he's proven himself to be too good to be let go at the moment. But I also think you've got to have somebody there just in case, because what if Eder goes in against Man United and he doesn't look great and Pukki's still not fit? I mean, then you're looking around kind of like, what do you do now? I mean, I know you said that obviously it's going to be hard to attract people, but I think if we did the same thing that we've done for quite a while now and we kind of spread our wings a bit further and go looking for foreign players, I think for a lot of them, whether we're bottom or not, the Premier League is going to be an attractive prospect anyway. And I think it will be for them a chance to get into the place where a lot of players want to get. So I think we should do both there, really.
An interesting dynamic with this transfer window as well. Of course, we've seen Philipp Heiser go out on loan to FC Nuremberg in the second Bundesliga, the equivalent of the Championship, so to speak. And, of course, Dennis Schrebeni, if he does complete his move to Paderborn, which I think we expect, then that would essentially free up two non-homegrown players for Norwich City to add to their registration, which would basically free up two potential signings for foreign recruits. And of course, with Patrick Roberts' loan ending, that frees up a loan space as well. Maximum, of course, of 17 registered foreign players. Norwich did have the full 17, but with Schrebeni and Heiser leaving, that would take it to 15. So are you expecting perhaps Norwich, as Anna said, to look in those foreign markets again, given, as you said earlier, where they are in terms of finances?
I think they're always looking in their markets, aren't they? I'm not sure on the type of transfer, whether it's a sort of one for the future. You look at your Buendias, who were signed 6 months before they joined. Mario Vrancic, arguably, because he was signed, I think it's from the Bundesliga, he just got relegated. Yeah. But he took a long time to adapt to English football, which a few of these signings did. So I think to say that Norwich would look in these markets for an answer now, I think that's a hell of a stretch. I don't think that's, you know, the realistic sort of circumstance. But at the same time, I don't really see Norwich signing anyone. Not anyone for the first team, because resources, league position, I sort of sit firmly on that.
But would you be happy with that?
Yeah, I'll be fine with it, because I trust this club. And also, I suppose that depends on my... that relies on my outlook, which is relegation is not the end of the world. Because obviously, you want to stay in the Premier League. The whole point of this revolution at Norwich is to be in the Premier League, which is where we are. But you've got to be there in the right circumstance. You've got to be there in the right sort of condition, so to speak. But yeah, for me, I'm satisfied either way.
And we have seen Norwich in the past, and they've been shackled because of it. And you mentioned that transfer window back in, 2017? The Naismith window.
15,
Tim Closer joined in as well. 16.
And
Patrick Bamford on loan, of course. I forgot to mention him in our bad loans earlier. He's certainly one we could file in that category. The money is interesting, isn't it? Because it feels like when you have it, and Aston Villa are a fantastic example of this, it sets expectation. But for some supporters, and of course we hear it perhaps every window, there'll be a cry of a lack of ambition. How do you see that?
The lack of ambition annoys me so much, because it's just not, though, is it? Because realistically, you look at Norwich City before Stuart Webber, it was a fairly toxic club. I think he said... Stuart Webber said in an interview with you, he said about how there were so many of these personalities, these big personalities, who didn't really want to play for Norwich. You look at players like Johnny Howson, he's a prime example from how I've viewed the club anyway. So the whole sort of turnaround in, 3 years has been immense, and we're not even, we've barely started. So to then call, I don't think anyone's heads are being called for, but to then call for a lack of ambition, I think it's just absolutely ridiculous. It's also really disrespectful to this football club, because they're doing their best. You look at Delia doing the best, recruiting people like Webber, Kieran Scott, etc., to sort of turn this around. To then call for a lack of ambition because they won't splash millions in the transfer market, millions they don't have, is absurd. But also, what sort of frustrates me is this expectation that someone's going to come in with, or a billionaire is going to come in and sort of give Norwich free rein to spend whatever they want, which, one, that won't happen. And two, the bad cases like QPR, they outweigh the better examples like Bournemouth, significantly. So realistically, this sort of money money doesn't grow on trees, although, you know. But that's the way some Norwich City fans view it, which really frustrates me. I don't really expect much, but that's no disrespect to the club at all.
How do you see it now? Will you be frustrated if Norwich don't sign anyone this window?
I will be a little bit frustrated. I'm not saying, obviously, go out and spend millions, because that's not going to happen. I think any fan of Norwich knows that that's not going to happen. But I don't want to see them go through that whole issue again, where they were where they were at a point where they were being forced to put Tetti as centre back, because it was frustrating to watch, and I know it was frustrating for the players as well, to just have a little bit of backup. I'm not saying somebody who's going to go straight into the first team and do really well, but to have somebody there who you know you are able to bring in if worse comes to worse, I think that's the most important thing. And we just didn't have that at that point. And that's what got... Obviously, nobody could have imagined the amount of injuries we'd have, but it happened. And now we've got to kind of think, if that happens again, what do we have? And I think that's why they need to have just a little bit of backup.
Interesting. Right. I think that's the transfer window ticked off, which is the end of my list. We'll finish by getting, as we always do, a nice prediction for that trip to Old Trafford on Saturday. Anna, let's start with you. How optimistic are you feeling? How do you see this game going? What's the score going to be?
Trouble is, you know me, I'm always optimistic, I feel.
I've got two optimists.
I go into every match going, oh yeah, it'll be fine, we'll win that one. We could play against Barcelona, I'll be like, yeah, that's easy.
Ben's a fan of Barcelona.
But you know what? Genuinely, I'm going for a scrappy 1-0 for Norwich.
I think we'd all take that at the moment. Ben, what about you? How are you seeing this?
2-1 Norwich.
Oh, I like that.
Phil Jones brace.
Like that. I think I'm going to go for a similar repeat to what we saw at Carrow. I'll go for a 3-1 defeat. But valiant, I think we'll describe it, a good performance. Anna, Ben, thank you very much for joining me. It was a slightly longer episode for you to make up for the lack of Terrace Talks over the festive period. Of course, very busy for everyone involved in terms of trying to fit in everything that we need to fit in with festivities, with football. Let's see what Manchester United hopes, because as the guy said, this is essentially a free hit for them, and it will be interesting to see whether they can back up a performance with a result, because ultimately that is the next task. Guys, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for watching. Let us know what you think Norwich City will do in this transfer window. What do you hope Norwich City will do in this transfer window? The comments are down below. Leave a like as well if you like this video. And remember to subscribe to the Pinken YouTube channel as well. We should have Corey coming on next week, of course, who many of you will be familiar with as being the transfer or rumour finder. So that will be interesting next week to get his thoughts on the transfer window. Of course, it could be a long month in terms of the amount of players that Norwich City get linked with. Thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you on the other side of Old Trafford.
Casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.